Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Financial Translator, where we discuss financial topics in layman's terms to move you from confusion to confidence on a given topic. I am your host, Kirk Krekemeyer, the principal advisor at Pebble Valley Wealth Management. We are a fee-only financial advisory firm helping our clients make informed decisions on their road toward financial security. You can find more information at pvwealthmgt.com. On today's show, I'm going to discuss some college-related financial tips for both parents and students. I'm sure there are many things on the to-do list for both parties with this upcoming move, and financial-related topics are probably not on the top of the list right now, but topics that will come up before you know it, and so it's worthwhile just being aware of them and discussing them as you see fit. I'll spend some time on withdrawal considerations from the 529s, but then I'll also go into a few other topics in this podcast. You can also reference my blog post on this topic, where you'll find a link to a past blog post I did on just 529 plans in general, if you have more questions about those particular plans. As a brief legal disclaimer, my discussions here should not be construed as financial or investment advice, and each person's situation is unique. All right, let's go. So there's going to be five topics I'm going to talk about today. One will be just withdrawing money from the 529 plans. And then I'll talk about covering costs that you may not have saved for in advance. Talk about a power of attorney health care for the child, the FAFSA and where it comes into play for loans and aid. And then just a topic about making sure you have a discussion with your student about who's paying for the other extracurricular expenses and some guardrails around that. So those are the five topics. The first one is going to be, again, talking about withdrawing funds from a 529 savings plan. This will be the bigger topic of today. And the reason I want to bring it up is because for those who have been using the 529 plan, congratulations. Great job to make this time easier, having the funds ready to go. But up to now, you've been putting money in and maybe rebalancing, hopefully, or having a target date fund. But this is now a new phase where you have to start taking the money out. So a few topics to consider and some brief answers. So the first one is, what expenses can be reimbursed from the 529 savings plan? Obvious one is tuition and room and board come into play. But there's a few other specific ones that you may have questions about and some nuances. If you want to check the source of this, the IRS publication 970 gets into the description of what's all covered, as well as maybe your 529 plan document. And the other distinction I'll make, I'll cover it right away here, is there's a 529 savings plans, which is what majority of people have, but some of you may also have a 529 prepaid plan. Prepaid plans only cover tuition. So if there's an exception with prepaid plans, I'm going to bring it up first. And so what I'm about to discuss, if you have a prepaid plan, that only covers tuition. But for the rest of you who may have a 529 savings plan, again, common things that are covered: tuition, fees that you pay to the school, books, supplies and equipment required by the school. Room and board is covered if they're enrolled at least half-time. If you have a student the second year or later that's living off-campus, that off-campus living is covered as well, that you can withdraw from the 529, provided that the monthly reimbursement amount is less than or equal to the room and board that would be required at the school. So cross-check that for the amount that would be covered. It does cover, purchase of computers or, peripheral equipment and software and the like. Again, as long as it is provided, required by the school. It doesn't cover, gaming videos and stuff like that. But again, things that are required by the school or a computer, it is covered. It does have, you can use the student loan for paying off student loans up to $10,000, but that's a topic for another day. Things that are not allowed, though, one, like college application fees, that's kind of been in the past, but that is not a allowable expense to reimburse. Transportation to and from school is not. Any insurance, like rental insurance or dorm insurance you may have. Sports, club, social fees, different fraternity systems and sorority systems. If it's purely social, not covered. If it's part of room and board, then it would be. And then also any furniture or decorations that you may be or have been picking up, those are not covered as either. So it's just the base room and board costs. In terms of how do you go about pulling this money out and paying the bills? And so when you basically will tap in, you log into your 529 plan. The key is, again, assuming that it's for an expense that I just mentioned, you'll want to click on, it's a qualified expense, meaning it's qualified under the definition of education expenses. And you can, the money can go directly to the school if you want. So obviously for the tuition and room and board, if they're living on campus, that payment can go directly from the 529 to the school if you wish. Or if you want to just have it sent to your own checking account and then you pay the bill. First year students, you may think, well, why do that? I can just send it to the school and be done. But for those who have students living off campus or other reimbursement, some of the expenses or the reimbursement you want to have sent to your own checking account for reimbursement. I guess if the student paid for something directly, you can also send it directly to that student for any reimbursement if, in fact, they were paying it out of pocket. Personally, for me, I just had an ACH connection to my checking account for everything, and then I passed on the funds, whether it's to the student, reimbursed myself for expenses I incurred, like a computer cost, or paid the school myself directly. Again, I guess an exception here for prepaid plans, those who have them, again, only for tuition, but those funds must go directly to the school. So you have no choice of where those funds go. Tuition payment must go directly to the school. So when should you withdraw funds from the 529 plan? And do you have to withdraw it before you pay the bill or concurrently, or how does that all work? So in general, the funds can be withdrawn after you pay the bill. As long as it's a qualified expense and you have records to prove it, if ever challenged on it. But it doesn't have to be before or concurrently. But the key thing is it does have to be in the same calendar year that the expense was incurred. So, if you've been, if you bought a computer or having some fees that you've been paying, if it's a qualified expense, just keep track of them all. And then you can, withdraw from the 529 to reimburse yourself for that. In terms of receipts, obviously, school statements and computers, keep the big ticket items. Later on, if you have that person living off campus, personally for me, I did not keep every single receipt for groceries and the like. Just made sure that the monthly reimbursement was less than the room and board for the college. Kept a copy of the rental lease, but I did not get every receipt for off-campus living type of purposes. You do want to give yourself enough time for withdrawing the funds. If the bill is due tomorrow, you don't just call up the 529 today and say, hey, I need the money for tomorrow. There's a process that you have to go through to get those funds. And so first, you have to sell the security that's in the 529 plan. Then it takes a day to settle, maybe 2 days if you have ETS, but most of the time it's a next day settle. If you're having it sent to the school, you've got a lot of time for that. If you're having it ACH'd into your bank, you got the 1 day in, 1 day back out. So basically just give yourself at least a week more if you can to start the process where you contact the 529, sell the amount of funds you need to generate the cash, and then start directing those funds, whatever process you chose, as I discussed above. Again, an exception for the 529 prepaid plans. If you're covering, it always takes a little more time going directly to the school, but if you're covering an out-of-state school, it is allowed. You'll be very aware of a factor that's applied. You don't get full credit, but you get a high percentage of the credit that goes to out-of-state tuition. But there again, it may take extra time because you have these factors they have to figure out. So prepaid plans, give yourself a little more extra time. When you're withdrawing the funds, is there anything to consider in terms of, do you do a pro rata withdrawal? Do you withdraw from a certain fund, et cetera? So a couple of things on the investments and savings considerations as you're doing withdrawals. One, I guess just in general, be aware, unlike your own retirement savings plans, which, your retirement may be years away, and once you do start withdrawing for retirement, it's got to last over, 30 plus years for your life. Expected lifetime span. The college time horizon is much, much shorter. As you know, the kids grow very quickly. And secondly, once you do start taking the funds, you're done in 4 years. So it's a much, much shorter time horizon. So make sure you're aware of what's invested in the 529 plan and adjust risk down as that time approaches. Obviously, we're here now, so your time horizon is very short. So you should be carrying very little risk in those investments right now, in my opinion. If you chose an age-based plan, the program takes care of that for you. You know, as the child ages, they automatically reduce down the risk in those portfolios. If you are investing it yourself outside of an age-based option, you can only make investment changes twice a year. So as you look at your allocation, if you're overweight or you need to reduce a given asset class, you could direct your withdrawals to that particular asset class if you want. It's a way to kind of sneak in an extra allocation change, if you will, because you're allowed to take withdrawals as you need them. You'll also have a time now to look at, you know, you'll know what your costs are, you know, you'll know where the child is going to school, the clarity of how much is needed now. So it's a good chance to look at what is left for the bills to pay, you know, what amounts you have in the plan, and any, you know, savings adjustments that you need to make or fine tune it to get you through these last few years. One quick exception here, you know, getting in the tax weeds, and I'm not an accountant, so verify with your own accountant, but if a person has modified adjusted gross income below $80,000 for a single filer or $160,000 filing jointly, there is a tax credit, American Opportunity Tax Credit. If your income is below those levels, it gets partial credit up a bit higher than that. But if you're close to that, take a look at that American Opportunity Tax Credit. It's worth $2,500 per child. So if you qualify, worth considering, and you want to make sure you pay up to $4,000 of tuition, you know, out of pocket, not from a 529 plan, so that you qualify for that credit. And then just very briefly, it's not the focus of this podcast, but if you're looking at your 529, you say, wow, I'm going to have some excess funds there. Just recall, refer to my blog post that I'll link in my on my website. But if you have excess funds, you can always change a beneficiary to other family members, you know, other children, yourselves. You can leave it in there for future education needs for yourself or your child. In a recent Secure Act 2.0, you could also use a portion to fund a Roth IRA for the beneficiary, but a lot of rules you got to qualify for. But anyway, it's not the end of the world if you have excess there. Just want to quickly point that out. If the child got a scholarship, you know, so maybe you saved, but suddenly you didn't need as much because they got a scholarship, that you can withdraw those funds, you know, in the amount relative to the scholarship without incurring a 10% penalty. If it's not a qualified expense, you know, if you take funds out and it's not one of those qualified expenses I mentioned, then you are going to be hit with a 10% penalty, not on the full amount, just the investment gains, but still a 10% penalty plus it counts as ordinary income. So, you know, definitely, you know, make sure you, if you can, try to use it only for qualified expenses or use it for other purposes that are allowed. So that's it for the withdrawing from the 529 plans. I said that was going to be the bigger topic. So just a few other quick topics to consider. This next one is, you know, both applies to both parents and students. And that is, well, what if you didn't save or you got to cover some of these costs outside of a 529 plan? And so there, you know, the different ways you can go. It be unique to each family, each situation, you know, some combination of, you know, parents and or the students. You know, the parent could be looking at their budget. The child is off to school now. You'll find there's not a big, or at least I found, there wasn't a big drop in the budget needs because, you know, you still have the house, you still have a big chunk of the food bill. But on the margin, there'll be some costs that are lower, especially if there were active activity-related fees for the student. You know, that now is gone. So look at your budget and see if there's anything you can squeeze out of there. Student loans or parent loans, I'll talk about FAFSA in a second. So if you fill that out, that is an option. And then maybe just tapping equity of other assets you may have, like your home or insurance policies. The one thing to be aware of, you know, that this past year and a half, interest rates have gone up quite a bit, a lot. And so, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, a home equity line may have been pretty attractive at a 3.5-4% rate. Now that rate is likely in the 8.5s and 9 levels. And so that is an option perhaps for you, but just be aware of what that current interest rate is. Very, very high. Just as a cross-reference, if you did apply, if you fill out the FAFSA, student loans, undergrads, you're going to be paying 5.5% for student loans this year from June 30, or I guess July 1st till next June 30th. Graduate students are at 7.05%, and the parents plus, it is at 8.05%. So much higher than it has been in the past, but not as high as, say, current home equity lines right now anyway. Another topic to consider, and that is parents, you know, you may want to consider establishing a power of attorney health care for your child. You know, they're no longer babies. They're now 18, and legally they can control, you know, financial transactions and their own privacy. It's very likely that your school will have them. I'm trying to think who signs it. I guess the student signs it. The student will have to sign some paperwork that will allow parents to access the healthcare information and to help with decisions if needed. But that's going to be covered in that regard. But it's a good idea just to establish a power of attorney. Again, healthcare only. Don't worry about financial for now, I don't think, in my opinion. But for healthcare, just in case, you know, if care is needed away from the school facilities, or even if there's a request for paperwork between hospitals and the like, sometimes they can get a little picky about the necessary authority just due to privacy. So power of attorney for healthcare for the child, not a bad idea. Another topic I mentioned earlier, and that is the FAFSA form. So unfortunately, it's too late for this academic year. The deadline was June 30th for the 23-24 academic year. But if you missed it, and it's like, damn, I kind of need that for next time, so just be aware of it and fill it out for this coming academic, the 24-25 academic year. Normally, it's available in October. This year, it's going to be delayed a bit, I understand, because there's some changes being made to the FAFSA program. So for those who are on top of it, you may not be able to do it right away, but just be aware of it. I know one of the changes coming up, you used to get a credit if you have more than one child in college. That would give you a benefit to the calculation in the program, but they took that away. There's one change I know that came through. Many people say, well, I make too much income. I'm not going to get the benefits anyway, so why bother? But again, I mentioned, you know, in order to get those federal student loans, you do have to fill out the FAFSA form. And also, you know, the colleges do look at that for potential aid. So you never know until you fill it out. So it's worth filling out at least and you know, keeping your options open. And then the last topic for today's podcast anyway, again, applies to both parents and students. And that is just talking about, you know, who is going to be paying for any extra expenses, extra activities, and what are the kind of reasonable spending amounts. And so, again, this is going to be unique to each family and student dynamic. But just recognize it is something that probably the student has not had to think about much in the past. You know, you were just covering things for them, and there's a lot of moving parts, and it's all financial related stuff. But it's worth having the discussion of, okay, you know, if you're going to be spending out-of-pocket costs, you know, is that something that, you know, the student is going to cover based upon their, you know, past summer jobs? You know, we always call it the books and beer money. Or is there a portion that the parent is going to cover? You know, how much is that kind of expected to be? So just have that open discussion with the child, letting them know, you know, where that funds would come from, how they would pay for it, and who's responsible for paying the amount each month if they're using cards, which I'll talk about in a second here. So it'll be a worthwhile discussion. Just make the future money conversations go a bit smoother. There's always going to be some surprises, but at least this can minimize them a little bit. And the other thing too, you know, your child is going to be making friends with you know, people in the dorms or in the college life, and everyone's going to have a different approach to things. So maybe, you know, one child can, like, hey, let's go and, you know, spend. It's not an issue. Other students may be, you know, paying a big portion of the college themselves, and things will be pretty tight. So everyone's coming from a different perspective, and so it's worthwhile having that conversation with your child so they know where they fit in and kind of how to not only spending for themselves but being aware of other students as well. How are you going to pay for it? You know, some colleges have, you know, they have a student ID card. Some colleges allow you to put on, like, college cash or whatever they call it, like Cybucks at Iowa State or Sooner Bucks, you know, it's things like that. So check with that. The parent could, or the student could, you know, put a dollar amount on there, by semester, I think it was, if I recall correctly. Other people may get a credit card. But if you do that, you know, one, the parent may have to co-sign with the student because they don't have much of a credit history probably. And two, you know, consider, you know, putting a pretty low credit limit on there. Again, it's intended for convenience. You know, if you got to worry about buying airline tickets, maybe the parent card takes care of that when that happens. And so just be aware of setting up limits and making them aware of, okay, what amount, you know, may be needed on that card, who's paying it off each month. And, you know, if, especially if you're a cosigner, you know, the parents, you know, make sure you monitor the balance and activity and make sure it's being paid off in a timely fashion. So definitely not, this is not the time to get in the habit of having the student run up a balance on a credit card that can't be paid off each month. So let's not go there. So those are my five topics, I guess. You know, definitely, like I said, many non-financial related topics going on right now, and definitely enjoy those. You know, that's the big focus right now. But I just wanted to make you aware of these topics and bring them up at the right time that only you the parents know how to do at the right time in the right fashion. But in the meantime, just, you know, embrace the excitement that you have. You know, it's an exciting time for both you and your child. So, you know, embrace them as well as they go off and, you know, forge their next exciting phase of life. All right, that's a wrap on today's topic. Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Financial Translator. I hope this discussion helped clear up any confusion and will lead to more confident financial decisions. Thanks for your time, and be sure to check out all of our resources at pvwealthmgt.com. Until next time, go confidently.